Hello, hello, and welcome to the Champions League podcast. It's episode 23 of Matushka's Right Peg. Union Berlin had a absolutely massive game on Saturday against Werder Bremen. Took a while for the goal to come, but eventually one of the standout players for Union this season, the midfield maestro, the water carrier, the man who seems to cover every blade of grass, Rani Kadira, popped up with a goal, and this sees Union in the Champions League. Let's rewind a little bit before that, though, because I know that Mark and Baz, you were gathering beforehand to have some food, etc. Baz, you were on cooking duties, I believe. Is that right?
Well, it was kind of voluntary because it's kind of these strange traditions that we started a couple of years ago to do something special for the end of the year. But yeah, this strange group of international season ticket holders of Union got together, 12 of them, for a brunch in Friedrichshain with, what would you expect, black pudding, beans, 20 eggs, as you righteously counted, a lot of bacon, some zect as well to kick off the celebrations and to just have a good time together. Because as we all know, for those at least who go to the stadium, it's not really about the football, but it's about meeting your friends, meeting your mates, chatting about life and about football and all the other stuff in the world. And that's actually what we did, including Mr. Jameson.
Very nice, very nice. It seems a very kind of Zingler-esque feast, this, not one for the vegan. Did you enjoy yourself? Was Baz's cooking any good, Mark?
It was fantastic. It was, as expected, wonderful. There was about 17 bread rolls per person, which I think they're probably still getting through around about now. There was Mr. Greaves' famous black pudding soup. Seriously, I have no idea what the hell happened with that black pudding, but it tasted fantastic, though. I do say, I must say that. As Baz rightly mentioned, the hour and a half of the football, and I said this a lot, the hour and a half of the football and the 1 hour 40 minutes of waiting before the while we got to the stand, which is the next topic of conversation, probably the actual game itself, but the football itself was almost secondary. That was just horrible. It was just horribly tense, and the best thing about the day was just being all together and chatting rubbish, listening to the extended 35-minute Nine Inch Nails remix on the decks, which, I'm sorry, was not a remix, Baz. The bloody disc was warped. I don't care what you say, the vinyl was warped on that. No one repeats the same loop 35 minutes long. So anyway, that's enough for me for the pre-football shenanigans.
Sounds very good. One thing actually that one of our audience on Twitter, Arlene Azabut, somebody I got to know actually through Union, but strangely we went to the same school from the ages of 11 to 18. Little bit difference in age, not much, but a little bit. But we were messaging at halftime, and one of the things that we said, and you mentioned this tension, Mark, one of the things that we said was, well, we didn't get into supporting Union to have tense moments about qualifying for the fucking Champions League. We have enough tension with Sunderland. We got into Union to stand on a terrace and watch second division football with no stress. Obviously, nowadays, you have to get in the ground significantly earlier to get your spot. Where were you stood, this time, Mark? Because for the Freiburg game, we were, I would say, a little bit further to the goal line than we usually would stand. It was a good spot for Freiburg, but more tension in the air. No thoughts of a ding dong 4-2, I guess, before this game.
No, certainly not. There was a lot of people. There was a lot of people going on. We're talking here about setting off from Friedrichshain at 1 o'clock on the nose, and getting there 1 hour 40 prior to the game. We eventually reached our places, and we were in the normal distance from the centre spot, but further down towards the rail, which was handy for the beer.
Nice.
And Baz will tell us will tell us more on that. What do you reckon, Baz?
What struck me most was there was one moment when we approached the ground which reminded me very much of the other 27th of May 2019, Because it was it was 100 minutes before kickoff, you know, an insane amount of time before the ball was even rolling. But outside of the stadium, we could already hear the chants inside the stadium, the Eisern Union, the ping-ponging behind the stands. And that was exactly as on that Monday night in 2019. So even before we went in, we already knew that the atmosphere was going to be electric, I'd always say. That's only the second time, I don't know about you, Mark, only the second time that I approached the ground so much time before the game where you could already hear chants inside the stadium.
Yeah, I think there was definitely that sense in the air. For me, we talked about this as well, and this is where Mark as well knows about this from the Freiburg game as well. This crackle that was in the air. I didn't feel there was that what we felt against Freiburg personally. There was a little bit, but once the game started, it was just tense. It was just super tense. There was a very nice farewell to the four players, of course. We can't forget that before kickoff. And then we all sat down to bite our nails and check our phones for what's going on at the other places. So then we come to the game itself. How did you guys? How was it on TV? We were all kept up in the swept up in all the day itself. How did it come over on screen?
It's an interesting one actually, because very, I mean, it's a 2:30 kickoff, and I was going out to a brewery, would you believe, on the evening. So I did need to pace myself somewhat. So I decided not to have anything alcoholic until at least half time. So that was my kind of discipline. So I actually watched the first half stone cold sober, which I think that certainly increases how tense you feel yourself. But it did come across, I think, and it's a question that I would ask all of you actually. When Union get tense, my view is that we have the propensity to hit a few more direct balls rather than keep playing it and keep playing it. I felt that at times in that first half, we fell into that trap somewhat. And I think that kind of increases the tensity of the game. But it wasn't an intense game either, which was strange in the first half. I didn't feel that. This was a game where the players were like, right, we have to really win this. It had a bizarre end of season. Obviously, we talked about the glorious Berlin sunshine. It just had that end of season feel where obviously the other team had nothing to play for. So Werder Bremen are there kind of, yeah, maybe making the odd attack here and there, but there wasn't much coming from them either. So it was kind of a strange half, really. I don't know how much you saw, Kyle, but again, going back to me as a Sunderland fan originally and then supporting Union, you're probably one of the few who already support a Champions League club, and now you've got two. I know you're on the way back from Celtic's game on Saturday, so I don't know when you finally tuned into Union or if you were listening on the internet radio or whatever it was.
Yeah, I was listening on the radio conference that goes out on. I'm not actually sure what station it goes out in Germany, but it's the Sports Show app is how I get it through. So on the supporters bus, I was taken back from the Celtic game. It was trophy day there, so handing out the league medals and so on. I'm sure Josip Juranovic's league medal will be in the post as well, as he'd played enough games. But yeah, on the bus back, all the chat was about Dortmund and Bayern because it's we spoke about it last episode, how you know the title races don't tend to happen in these top leagues anymore, especially not in the last day. But Dortmund are serial bottlers, so that's for another time. But yeah, I tuned in for the second half by time got enough signal away from the ground and that, and it felt like the few times that the conference bounced on you and it felt like it was comfortable and that. But obviously when you hear Freiburg scoring and going ahead and that, you really start to worry and that. And for me, supporting Union, I didn't start following Union for success or anything like that. It's just something completely different and something that I've fell in love with. Knowing what Champions League football is like from a Celtic perspective, it's just another step above, you know, the atmosphere, tends to be incredible. Like Celtic Park can on some days be quite dull. This Saturday it definitely wasn't, but it can be quite dull when, you know, teams that maybe that don't have massive reputations come on like a dour midweek, because with three cup competitions or three domestic competitions and then European football, there's a lot of games that Celtic play every season. But the Champions League, yeah, it's something completely different. You know, when you look at teams that we can draw and stuff like that, it's just another level. I'm looking forward to seeing what the Unión think of it, experiencing it with their own club. You know, we'll go to the biggest teams, the biggest crowd, the biggest grounds. You know, we should get nice away allocations, unlike we have in some games in the last few seasons. It's a football fan, you dream of these crazy things. You know, the sort of, you dream of your club doing everything that's possible, but you don't think it'll actually happen. And none of us could say that 4 years ago today or 4 years ago on Saturday when we get promoted that we would ever be in this position, or at least not so rapidly. It's going to be fun.
Certainly will be fun. Going back to the game, obviously you mentioned it was tense in the stadium. On our WhatsApp group, unfortunately Cherry can't be with us today, but Cherry started getting nervous in the second half. But previously in the first half, he said, "Oh, don't worry, we'll score." And I just reminded him of that and said, "Relax." And I must admit, in the second half, I felt that we got the ball down. Once we made some substitutions, I just felt that the game was really opening up for Union. I felt the fact that Freiburg scored before halftime was actually very, very useful for Union, because it meant that there was a different team talk that probably Urs Fischer gave. I don't know if they would have known the score, but I would highly, highly likely think that we knew that we had to win that game. And I think there was nothing better than going out in that second half knowing that we had to win, even though in the end we could have been beaten and still qualified. But yeah, when the goal came, obviously, it was again very similar to maybe the 4-2 against Freiburg. It was just immense relief. And then at the same time, Frankfurt scoring was just the icing on the cake. What was it like in the stadium, Baz and Mark?
I mean, I was thinking probably after 70 minutes, if I would be a journalist like I have been, you always have like two totally different stories prepared on your computer. And one would have been, you know, Union playing 0-0, and this was another example of how many times you actually failed to break down a defensive wall at the Alte Försterei. You know, we didn't lose, but we didn't win against inferior teams like Schalke and Bochum or whatever. And it could have ended that way against Bremen as well. And the other version of the story would have been like, yeah, the Union roller coaster, it just keeps on pushing and pushing and pushing, and they all know what to do, and then in the end, the goal comes. So I'm not sure whether it was a roll of the dice that the goal came, or whether it was part of the program. But I never really felt insecure in the stadium. The only thing that annoyed me was I had a feeling that we kept on sticking to plan A, which was bringing in the crosses, which were almost without any exception very bad, unfortunately. Last Saturday, except for a couple of set pieces of Trimmel. And the goal actually came from finally giving a cross, you know, slightly back to the edge of the box where people are incoming and where there's a little bit more surprise, and where someone like Kadira can actually score a goal, which he never does. So it was a knife's edge, but I've never really been worried that we wouldn't make it, also because I was never worried that Bremen would score. But maybe Mark, one row behind me, was freaking out. I don't know.
Similar. I wouldn't say that I was freaking out. It was a very uninspiring first half. Mark's resume of the first half from in front of his screen is pretty much what we saw as well. And as Baz said, huge amount of crosses. I must say the two Werder Bremen central centre-backs, they didn't really have to do anything of the high arts of defending, but they did very well to stop us getting through there. And of course, they completely nullified Becker by giving him absolutely no space to run behind them. The thing is that we didn't force the issue, and this is where we come into the second half, where we did start to be more creative. And I still thought, I was confident that something would come out of it. But the feeling like this is going to be one of those days, there was a 5-minute spell where Becker hit one across the post, where there was, I think there was a good save. And then there was the, to absolutely epitomize everything, Becker's goal. Now, the thing is that like we were absolutely dead level. We couldn't have been in a better position. We were assistant referee height for that pass. And we saw that Becker was offside when he got that ball. And my thinking after that is like, based on this game, how this game has gone, they're going to score here. 100% they'll score here. And that'll be exactly the epitome of this one of those days games that we play. And lo and behold, it gets clipped. And I think there was a deflection there as well. And it goes pinging into the top corner. Ecstasy, especially from the guy in front of us, who I think we almost had to call an ambulance for. And he kept on going like, good. Ooh. I think the game had already been restarted, actually, by the time he finally realised that the goal had been disallowed. God bless him. Lost half a beer, probably one flip-flop. But eventually we got through, obviously, and like Mark said, it was the workhorse, the unsung hero, Khedira, with the goal. The thing that, just to round off the game, we might be coming in a second to the goings on after the game itself, but to round off the game, this is why sometimes I fall a bit out of love with football, with all the commerce and all the gambling companies and all the money that's going around. Sometimes it's not as enjoyable as it once was. But when we were all there, and within 5 minutes, we had completely changed the situation in the Champions League places. Frankfurt had scored to almost cement the Champions League places. The top of the table, the title, changed twice as well. That's just it really is fantastic. There's very few sports where you can have this roller coaster of emotions and results happening within 5-6 minutes. Was very interesting to watch as well in the stadium, how the mood changed, how people heard results, how people heard the Dortmund are winning, Bayern are winning, Hertha are winning. My God, all sorts of strange results came out last weekend. And in the end, as you say, we could have lost and we'd have still gone through.
Yeah, it's funny with all this modern technology, dodgy stadium Wi-Fi. I read over the weekend that there was somebody, and they did it three times at Leicester. They started a rumor that Bournemouth had scored at Everton, and people actually believed it for a while. So it's always funny when you're actually in the stadium trying to get the knowledge about the other games that are going on. And I mean, My girlfriend said, are you not disappointed that you're not there? And I was just sat on my couch in the second half, just having a beer, smiling. I had the Dortmund game on my phone. Probably shouldn't say that, should I? Because it's clearly from somewhere dodgy. But there you go. You can edit that bit out, Kyle. I'll leave it in. And I was watching Union on the laptop, and it was just incredible. Yeah, like you say, Mark, just see the kind of the ping pong of different things, and the positions, and yeah, particularly the fans. But I think an honourable mention must go to our friends in Hamburg, because I think a pitch invasion and jumping around as if you've automatically gone up, then finding out there's 8 or 9 minutes of injury time, and then the other team scoring twice, must be absolutely up there and probably peak Hamburg. So well done to you guys on the pitch. Enjoyed watching those videos.
The thing is that they should have been warned, because on Saturday, one league lower, exactly the same thing happened with, I think it was Wiesbaden or Wuppertal, who thought that they had gotten promoted. And they went for a full-scale pitch invasion and were already celebrating, because what could possibly go wrong? The competition in Osnabrück was one down. Wiesbaden it was. Yeah, thanks, Kyle. What could possibly go wrong? And of course, in the 90th, Osnabrück, I think they equalized. And then far into injury time at the legendary Bremer Brücke in Osnabrück, a place where every football lover has to go, they scored a 2-1. And, you know, it's a burial atmosphere in Wiesbaden. So the lesson should have been never start a fucking pitch invasion unless you are goddamn sure that you got promoted. And apparently Zandhausen, by the way, one day later, the stadium speaker said congratulations to HSV with the promotion. But then again, everybody knew that the HSV game was the first to actually end. And at that moment, it was only the 92nd minute in Heidenheim was playing in Regensburg, if I remember correctly. And they got a penalty. And everybody could have known with a modern day technology, Mark, if it worked in Sankthausen as well, that there was still 8 minutes to play, which is quite a lot if you're just, you know, playing the long ball, the Hail Mary pass, I think you call it in English, and just hoping for miracles to happen. And miracles did happen. So I think those two matches were absolutely hilarious when you watch the footage. There is a cult TV show called Zeigler's Wunderbare Welt des Fußballs every evening, and they actually had this split screen from the Saturday and from the Sunday, and it's 2 minutes well in of your time well invested.
Yeah, it's interesting. In one of the group chats that we had about this season, one of the guys, Matt, and I know Kyle likes this one, about how many times previously Union conceded late goals. I think is interesting that this year that has slightly gone out of the window, and we seem to be the purveyor of certainly the later goals. The Dookie, someone brought up on Twitter, I think it was the Spanish Unioner, the Dookie goal against Gladbach at home, the 2-1, which came in injury time. Kyle, you do like those stats, don't you, about last minute goals and things like that? But
well, I cannot let a mention of Hamburg go by without getting one in on them as well, because they have a fan friendship with Rangers, so I wish them nothing but the worst. I was delighted to see that. I was unfortunately driving at the time, so wasn't able to follow the added time in the Heidenheim game, but, you know, seeing Heidenheim were losing and HSV were on course to get promoted, and was like, oh, well, looking at the silver linings, we'll get a good away allocation. I did the Hamburg away day in the season we get promoted, and Hamburg's a good place to go to, as much as they're a terrible club. The city is nice. Delighted, couldn't happen to a worse club. And yeah, I think the announcement from the Sandhausen PA guy, their stadium speaker, and that just makes it even sweeter. So, yeah. In terms of, you were saying, goals conceded after 80 minutes, well, I put that in my season spend for the season. I was reviewing it today. So we only conceded 6 goals after 80 plus minutes. And if I recall correctly, 2 of those goals came in the one game. So, yeah, that's something that we have turned a bit of a corner, it seems, on that. And hopefully that's something that, well, it stood us in good stead, obviously, given where the results are now. And maybe that's something we can pick on with.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think for me, when we look at the season very quickly as an overview, I think when I try to think of favourite moments and favourite players, and it sounds a bit cliche, but I do come back to the squad. And I think the goal that we scored against Werder Bremen kind of typifies the fact that we had people like Behrens, who were putting himself about absolutely solidly for 75, 80 minutes. The guy just is a constant runner. He knows his job. He does his job. He runs defenders absolutely ragged. And then someone like Sven Mikkel comes on. He's the man in the box. He's the one who, after a slight ricochet from another Union player, is the one who manages just to sort of gently poke, roll it towards Rani, who then just places it in the bottom corner. And for me, watching that goal back again and again, as I have done, and hearing a kind of a sort of a German commentator ape the sort of Spanish style of goal, but with Tor, with a massive extension. I won't do it. It'll be on the thread when we publish this podcast, and you've probably all seen it and heard the commentary. But the squad of players that we've managed to amass, who let's be really honest, we are not talking about man for man world class players. We're talking about a unit that has been molded into something that is far greater than the sum of its parts. And I think for me, this season is amazing to see that a club can actually still do that in the Bundesliga and can finish fourth. If we go away to big clubs and get thumped 5-6-0, get beat, get no points, I genuinely couldn't give a fuck in the Champions League, because we'll be there for the party and we've earned it. I don't think that will happen. I think if we can keep us, if Rune does the business, I think we've got the... just an incredible foundation for a good little run at people. I don't care where we play either. We put something out on the Twitter account. I know people will have some thoughts on that. Whatever happens, I'll try and get there to some of them and maybe record a few bits and pieces and produce something. We shall see.
That's actually the incredible thing, Mark, that even after qualifying for the Champions League, I've got the feeling that we've got so much to improve. We're definitely much more than the sum of its parts, but I think we're also looking forward. We know that we didn't even have a really high quality striker like we did last year with Awoniyi. We have problems in the creative midfield. Christian Preumer left us, which I think was quite a loss. And with Andras Schäfer being injured all the time, I think we lacked something there. So the insane thing is that I think that although we got so far, that we might still be on an upward trajectory. And I know that some people are going to kill me for this, but I think that there was a massive chance this season to have become champions, actually. If we look at the last 2 years of Union, we won five or six of our last games of the season. And if we would have done that this year, it would have brought us to 68 to 70 points, which, because of the weakness of Bayern Munich and the serial instability of Dortmund, would have gotten us ridiculously close to a championship. Now, I'm not going to say that we'll be champions next year. I'm not that stupid. But I'm just saying that on the very solid foundation, as you righteously said, Mark, that we have, there is still, I think that we know, and Urs knows, and that Oli know where we have to improve.
Well, like you're saying, in terms of we could have been ridiculously close. You look at some of the points we dropped. You know, we didn't beat Bochum this season. We dropped points to Schalke, Augsburg, who only just stayed in the league by the skin of their teeth as well, or at least avoided the playoff. You know, we dropped points to and Hoffenheim as well, close to the end of the season. We dropped points to some dreadful teams. Some people I've seen some people say on online that, you know, Dortmund will maybe never have as good a chance to win the Bundesliga. I don't think us or Leipzig or, well, thankfully not Leipzig, but I don't think us or, you know, anyone else will have as good a chance. But for our perspective, we can only focus on ourselves, and there is room for improvement. And that is absolutely crazy to say when, you know, we're only in the Bundesliga. This is what, our fourth season in the Bundesliga. We only got promoted 4 years ago, and we're looking at, you know, missed opportunities to go and win the actual thing. It's crazy to be in this position, but, you know, hopefully we can still find a way to progress again. You know, maybe next season the season goal is 41 points.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key for every season is just making sure we stay up. Let's not lose that one. Mark, obviously we're now sort of getting into the season that was. Maybe there's a few missed opportunities, but if you look at those first 10 games, after 10 games, Union has sat there, top of the league. We were top of the league for 7 weeks. I think that masked probably in the second half of the season some of the dips in form that we saw, because we managed to stay in and around that kind of top four for huge parts of the season, even when results faltered. How when you look back at this season, how do you think you'll view it?
I don't think it's a lost opportunity. I have to be honest. I can see it's always easier at the end to say, oh, we didn't beat Bochum, we didn't beat Hoffenheim, we played badly against Augsburg, and see them down at the bottom. But it goes to a deeper sense that we just don't play well against teams at the bottom. We don't seem to have a system set up to break down teams like that. And being honest with you, if you want to be the champions of any league, you have to find out a way of changing your system to defeat any team that's put in front of you. And while they do that, and while they do have a sort of a plan B, I don't really think that we can. I don't think we could have hoped for any, maybe a few points more. But you look at the games like against Mönchengladbach. We've said that already in this podcast, in this episode, the craziness of the last minute win against Gladbach at home, that could have easily gone the other way. So it's one of those things. It's one of those things. It's like in poker. Not you always remember the good hands that you got beat with, where you got beat with aces. You never remember when you beat somebody else. Luckily, if that's a way of saying it from a poker perspective. But that's it. I'm absolutely satisfied completely with this season and how it's gone. It's been an immense season. We've had Europe as well to in the middle as well. A decent cup run. I mean, what could you want more than this?
Indeed, indeed. What could you want more? Well, we're going to get more because we can get Champions League football, which brings me on to some of the other things. So we're gonna have a quick whiz around and look at favourite game, favourite players, favourite goal. Maybe mention the Europa League. Maybe a small chin wag on our great manager and sidekick, but sidekick in the transfer market anyway. But I'll probably just share my. To say favourite game would make it sound as if I'm talking about the football. So, but as we've said before, Union was never really about the 90 minutes. So for me, I think the favourite game was getting the opportunity to watch Union away at Saint-Gilles. Obviously, the game wasn't played at Saint-Gilles. It's, again, one of those very, very small grounds that, unfortunately, they weren't allowed to have standing. So they needed to move that fixture to Anderlecht. We were fortunate enough to go and have a meal beforehand. Again, a couple of lads from the group and a couple of lads at work. Thanks for listening, Asha. We had such a great time, and it just brought together a group of people who I'm really, really fond of. And yeah, unfortunately, the result on the night, it was a pretty poor performance. But again, I had a different experience. I was on the side, and I could actually just watch our fans sing for 90 minutes. Didn't matter what was going on the pitch, the Union just kept on singing and singing. And yeah, sometimes you look back at great wins, last minute goals. But that for me, again, it's just seeing Union somewhere completely different. And obviously somewhere that I did used to have a season ticket. I am now a member of Benfica. They just won their 38th title. Apparently they're not sick of winning. So they haven't won one for 4 years, so it was pretty lively here on Saturday night. So maybe I'll get to see Union at the Stadium of Light. Who knows? But yeah, what a season it's been. I might give my favourite player actually as well. It's big Kevin Behrens for me. He just exudes everything about this Union squad. As we've said, I mean the fact that the guy has managed to get into double figures. 8 goals in the league, 2 goals in the cup. He works his socks off. He's always putting his head in there. Pretty much most games, he'll risk a broken nose. He's just a fantastic player to have. And I think it's interesting actually that Jordan has seen his chances much limited in the second half of the season. And yeah, obviously he's maybe had a bit of confidence issues, but massive respect to Behrens because he actually kept him out of the team, and yeah, one of my real favourites.
Because it's interesting what you said about the Saint-Gilles game at Anderlecht, Mark. What I heard from my Dutch friends after the Ajax game in Berlin is they were so surprised that our fans, or that we, just kept on singing. And those are actually the moments where, you know, what for ourselves is just completely normal, how unusual it actually is that you've got like 90 minutes long organized support, whatever happens, and what kind of an impression it actually makes on the away team. So I think that was like one of the main takeaways of me from that match and from the entire European campaign, actually. You mentioned Kevin Behrens. I think my player of the season is Knoche, but I think he's in the same vein as Behrens and as Khedira. They're not sexy. They don't play any sexy football, but it's actually that very uneventful axis that keeps us floating. I think that with Renault in goal, with Knoche in central defense, with Khedira as a defensive midfielder, and Behrens probably for 20 of the 34 games as a central striker, we have been incredibly stable and maybe a bit boring, not very sexy. But I think for me, Knoche is like the epitome of that stability. And somebody like Khedira, by the way, like Behrens, who was underestimated at his previous side, and look at what Urs has done to him, with him, and what they have done with themselves. Roussillon, somebody who was unremarkable at Wolfsburg, who is like an unstoppable force on the left wing. But I have to say, Knoche, I'm here. And then let me just finish with the list that you sent. A mark with some favorite games or goals. The Becker goal against Augsburg for me at home was a screamer, you know, a very typical counterattack, him being quicker than the panicky Gikiewicz, and then from an impossible angle scoring. That was just very, very sweet. And you ask for the favorite game as well. You could say Ajax, but that's a bit of a cliche. I think the better example for me would be Hertha, the home game, actually, because one, it was one day after my 50th birthday, which some people don't stop talking about and reminding me of the fact that I've actually gotten into the big 5-0. But also, and I noticed that last Saturday, that how many people were humble and thinking about the beginnings and where we come from. And I mentioned the Hertha game because it was, I think, for everybody obvious when we beat Hertha so easily in the first game of the season, we don't have to worry about relegation. That's where we come from. Not worry about relegation, and everything else is good. So for me, that was already like a standout game on the long, long, long list of games that we visited at DAF this season.
Quite a lot of my choices have been stolen now, but fortunately, within the spirit of a good podcast and a good preparation, I do have something else prepared as well, so I can style this out. That's good. In terms of the player, best player of the season, my gran used to say, when she was watching any random Olympic event on the old telly, I'd give them all a gold medal. They're all fantastic. And you know what? It's kind of true. They are all fantastic. I can't really think of any Union player who's really let us down this year. Even the bit part players have done something. Of course, you could say Jordan has let us down. Yeah, okay. But yeah, I mean, he scored some important goals at the beginning of the season. Even Leonard Grill, thank you, Kyle. All he has been key to showing us what we miss when Renault's not there, which is another one on my list for player of the season. I've never felt so confident of a player when he's got the ball at his feet than Renault. And that game 2-3 weeks ago where he made a mistake and it almost went in and he almost got caught out, that was such a surprise because he never does it. You could give me two attackers running at him with the ball at his feet and I wouldn't, my heartbeat would not increase one jot. In contrast to Andy Luther, and even going back as far as Haas, Daniel Haas in net as well, where every game was a heart attack waiting to happen. Him and Knoche have been the standouts. Berends had a fantastic season. Kadira, I can't say enough about Kadira. But I'm being honest here. There is only one candidate for player of the season. And that's Becker. You can't. He has the absolute X factor. He's the reason we're up there. He's genuinely on the cusp of being proper world class. I'm not even joking there. He has things to work out. He sometimes runs down alleys, but his vision, together with linking into the goal that Baz said against Augsburg. Now, I came in late to that game and I knew for a fact that I would get nowhere near the guys until half time. So I went way down the other end where there was a bit more space and stood at the back. And I saw that absolutely in a line. And I swear to God, that goal that Becker scored against Augsburg, there was maybe a meter and a half. There was maybe a meter and a half of scope between Gikiewicz's leg and the post from that distance away to thread the ball in there. That was unbelievable. Goes down as my goal of the season. Next to, as I said in the last episode, Leiduni's goal against Freiburg, because that was just the explosion when that ball went across. And it's like, we're going to score. And then it all exploded. In terms of the match, Ajax would be the cliche. But it was my favorite game of the season. I can't really find another one that I enjoyed as much as showing Ajax up at home in front of underneath the lights with all the guys there with an electric atmosphere. It's definitely Ajax for me, with maybe an honorable mention for Munich, for the Munich home game as well, the Bayern home game, because that showed that we could mix it with Bayern. And that we could take points off them, and I also got to see it with my dad as well. So that was a nice secondary game for me as well. That's my choices for this year.
Just to come in on the Becker situation, I think very difficult to argue that he has not been the best player for Union. If you took him out, we wouldn't be where we are, and that's just a fact. I think the spirit of my choice is very much to give some praise to the kind of the workmanlike performance, which is something that I always like to see as a player. But when you review some of Becker's finishes this year, I mean the goal when we took the lead against Bayern Munich, Becker, the deft volley away at Gladbach. This is a man who has scored 12 goals this term. In the previous three seasons, he scored 7 times. And he was agitating to have more game time when we had Awoniyi. And now Awoniyi is gone. Becker has really taken the bull by the horns this season. And I think there's times when we've seen him kind of drop into a kind of deeper role, just trying to take the game by the scruff of the neck. He's not only been a great player, but he's taken on a lot of responsibility. You can see it when he's taken off, how furious he is. And I would always argue, managed in the right way, that type of player, it's great to see. Kyle, I know I sent around a long list of things, but I'm sure you'll have your thoughts on all of these.
Well, yeah, player of the season, I think it's fairly easy, and he's been mentioned already, but not mentioned as a player of the season. But for me, it's Frederik Renu. He's been the best keeper I recall watching Union in the whole time I've been watching them. And, you know, we've had some good goalkeepers in their time, particularly good shot stoppers, but the sort of calmness, you know, you don't expect Renault to make a mistake. which you did, of some other keepers we've had in previous seasons and that, is for someone who seems almost quite small for a goalkeeper, he's got such a calming presence in the box. And, you know, 11 clean sheets this year in the league is pretty incredible. And he, in my eyes, is a massive part of why we had the joint best defence in the league, along with Bayern. You know, that, which again is crazy that we are level with Bayern in a statistic like that. Another one that maybe he's not got mentioned yet, but Danilo Durki as well, had a fantastic season coming, especially as a new player coming in, first time playing overseas, like abroad for himself as well. Popped up with some key goals, the Gladbach one we've mentioned, and that. I thought he's fantastic, and maybe didn't fall to some of the errors that some of his other colleagues may have had in defence. But yeah, Frédéric Renard, yeah, for me, it's not even close. But there's so many players that played unbelievable this season, and, you know, had career seasons, Becker, Khedira, and so on. You know, even players that maybe didn't reach expectations, you know, like we said about Jordan, he still scored some very key goals, particularly at the start of the season. And Yannick Harbour as well was fantastic in the start of the season too. In terms of favourite game, 6-1 at Schalke. We hadn't beat them yet. And of course, yeah, they'd only just come up. It's great to see a team scoring goals no matter how we're sort of doing it. And Sven Michel's cameo that day was pretty incredible. Getting two goals off the bench. Favourite goal, Juranovic against Ajax. And that is partly, it was a great free kick, but also it was nice to see a guy who I've cheered on for the past 18 months with my Celtic hat on come over and, you know, make a strong impact straight away. And I think he can kick on next season as long as he's not played at left back. And I will scream that till thy kingdom come. And yeah, it's just been an incredible season with so many great moments. And, you know, it's a shame the only time I got to get to a game this season, we went and lost. So many, yeah, great memories following from home. And it's always a pleasure and never a chore.
Yeah, it's interesting that the two in the studio who should be representing the goalkeepers union didn't pick our goalkeeper for the best player of the season. But as you say, Kyle, I mean, not only those clean sheets, but that defensive record. Again, I mean, Union, we're a team that defend as a unit. The fact that, I don't know who the last team to beat us was at the Alte Försterei, but it was last season. So the fact that we've got through a whole season only undefeated at home, only Bayern Munich and Eintracht Frankfurt have previously done that. So we're up there with some big names. Probably was Dortmund, Baz, I think, but I'm genuinely not sure who the last team to beat us was. It was that long ago. It's hard, isn't it, to remember when you get old. Yeah, it was Dortmund. So the 6 points from Hertha are going to be missed. That'll be one thing. Be a shame that they're relegated for that. I mean, two very comfortable derby victories this year. And yeah, USG, you're right, obviously in the cup, but yeah, league, it was probably Dortmund. Well, there is a lot of stuff going on outside of Union, but also related. So maybe I can first of all go to Baz, because I know you like to rant, Baz, and this might give you a chance to have a bit of a rant.
I guess you're referring about the investment plans of the DFL, basically the Premier League organization of Germany. They wanted to sell 12.5% of their broadcasting rights for the next 20 years to an investor, officially to finance the investments in digital infrastructure and to make the Bundesliga brand internationally more famous. But obviously, there was also a desire from a lot of clubs to get some quick money to finance players' salaries and maybe finance some infrastructure projects like we have at Union. After a lot of fan protests, surprisingly, last week it was voted down by the clubs. I mean, there wasn't the required two-thirds majority when all the clubs from the first and the second Bundesliga gathered, probably in Frankfurt. I don't even know where it exactly was. Personally, quite happy about that, to be honest, because for me, it doesn't really make sense to sell your rights for 20 years. If you turn back the clock 20 years to 2003, who could have known that the entire TV watching experience has moved to streaming, that Amazon Prime, Facebook, DAZN would be big players. So we have no idea what we are selling. And if you don't get an expert on board who really makes the pie bigger, then it really doesn't make sense to me, but that's my personal opinion. And then Dirk Zingler, the president, after the fact came with a long email explaining why Union, which basically is why Zingler voted for the plans. You can notice a bit of cynicism in that, because I think that one of the dangers with Union at the moment is that Zingler's basically calling all the shots. Now, he is, of course, the guy who in the last 20 years made more right decisions than wrong decisions. So he does deserve a lot of respect for that and a lot of confidence for that. But I don't think it's in the long term very healthy that only one person seems to be making the decisions. And I thought in this case, his arguments were pretty weak because he didn't answer some of the points of criticism that were raised in the fan scene, right, about the quick money, but also the way the money would be distributed would actually cement the existing situation in the Bundesliga. So the big ones would have gotten much more money than the smaller ones, which in this case would have been really, really beneficial to us because the last 5 years, of course, have been a blast to us. But I think that would be opportunism, I think it's fucking called in English, and we should stay very, very close to our roots. Then he also mentioned his red lines, and his red line was that there should be no more kickoff times than there already are. Then my answer would be like, what a ridiculous argument that is, because we already have a Friday afternoon kickoff, we have a 3:30 kickoff, we have a 6:30 kickoff on Saturday, and we have a 3:30, 5:30, and 7:30 kickoff on Sunday. So there are not a lot of red lines in that area. And the entire argument is much more about what do we need the money for, and are we really going to make the pie bigger for everyone? So, yeah, summarizing my short rant, I think it's been a very wise decision to say no to the investment money. I don't say no to investment money per se, but then there should be a bigger plan behind it. In my professional job, I used to work with some people from Netflix who went on to work for La Liga in Spain and who have in the last 5 years built up La Liga as a global brand and especially grew the market a lot in Latin America. If the DFL or Dirk Zingler comes up with a plan how to make the Bundesliga more famous across the world and thus generating more income, I'm all in favor for that. If he needs more money for that, I'm all in favor for that. But for me, there seemed to be no plan. End of rant. And I think that Kyle wants to react now.
Yeah, I agree in terms of the opportunism from Zingler. Union have a lot of upcoming, like massive capital expenditure projects coming up. We've got the youth training center that's being built currently, and then we have the stadium expansion that's going to cost a fortune. And I'm sure that this investment money would have absolutely paid off that, and then there'd be no effect to playing budgets and so on. But at the same time, we've got to remember that how exceptional our performance is at the moment and how it would be, it takes, you know, a change of manager or a change of sporting director. And let's not forget, Oliver Runert says that he's not going to be around for ages. You know, we've probably got a couple of years left with him. We could we could very easily, you know, hire someone crap. There's plenty of crap sporting directors out there. Look across the city to show a fine example of many of them. We could be easily relegated and that. And then what good does the teams at the top of the Bundesliga getting a fortune again? What good does that make us? I watch a lot and go to a lot of rugby union here in Scotland, and there's been private investments in the English Premiership there, and that was a 13 team league to start the season, and two of them went bust at the start of the season, and one is going to go bust this week, and these are historic clubs. This money came in from private investment, and it's basically inflated the wages to a point where it's unsustainable. So then teams can't afford to run when that investment money runs out, and they're meant to just carry on as normal. If investment money were to come into the Bundesliga, I don't trust that every single club will spend that money in an effective way. It would inflate transfer prices because agents will want their slice of the pie, and clubs overseas will want a bit of that money as well. And you'll be left in a situation where clubs will just go bust because they'll be run terribly. We saw in the pandemic how close some clubs were to going bust because they were run dreadfully as it was, and that television payments had to come early to keep clubs afloat. So I'm against investment in that part. In that sense, and I think again from Onion's perspective, we should be campaigning. We wrote this letter a few years ago. It wasn't that long ago, 5 years ago, talking about how we could completely overhaul how money is distributed in the Bundesliga, and it should be much more fairer. And it's quite disappointing that Dirk Zingler thinks that's no longer appropriate. We said those things for the right reasons back then, and the situation isn't any different just because we are fighting at the top of the league. Because, like I say, it takes a couple of bad moves and we'll be back to where we were. You know, it can happen, and it can happen to anyone. It's happened to Schalke, it's happened to Stuttgart in terms of getting relegated. It's now happened to Hertha, and they have spent, what, 400, 500 million euro in the last few years, and for what? To go and be going to Sandhausen next season, you know. And it's, on a lighter note, you know, it's a shame that they got relegated, and yet we still need to go over to Charlottenburg at least three times next season, but so be it. But yeah, definitely against the investment in general, but the league does need to modernize how it markets itself, and there's been some change there, but in terms of its TV deals and so on, you know, I'm frustrated constantly with the deal in the UK because they don't show games within the 3 p.m. window because it's a supposed blackout, where football's not meant to be shown in the UK between 3 and 5 p.m. on a Saturday. But they managed to show the Dortmund and the Bayern game this weekend on Sky Sports, who have the rights here. There's never any... They'll often join games late. There was a game a couple of weeks ago that joined half an hour in because another game they were shown went to extra time. It's frustrating, and fans shouldn't have to resort to illegal means to watch games if that's how they feel. There should be legal ways to watch it, and a direct to fan program that rights builders can also show, but like La Liga have done, is the way forward. You know, and it's the same as how people in America or people in Germany even couldn't watch every English Premier League game, but people in England can't. It's the way TV rights and that are dished out needs radical overhaul if leagues want to grow and leagues want to service their fans better, because people will watch them. These illegal sites don't exist for no reason. So why not make it illegal, make legal ways for people to watch them and monetize that?
Two good rants there from Baz and Kyle. Maybe Mark, you can give us a slightly shorter take on it as we close out this podcast.
I mean, I don't want to end on a downer, really, after all this, after everything that we've said about Champions League, about our season, about players of the season, about great goals, about great games, about being together with the lads. I think it's a fact of life at the moment that this is the direction that football is going. I don't think that we shouldn't protest about it. We shouldn't go silently into the good night and say, like, right, well, we might as well just pack up shop. But the fact is that football is the same as any other business and any other society, I have the feeling, at the moment. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and they should be happy with a slice of this cake, however small it is. And for that, they have to sacrifice the family silver. And I don't agree with it. I think that it's quite cynical for us to always be the so-called club that is against this sort of stuff. There were things where we voted against it, and it was only us and St. Pauli voted against it. I remember votes on similar directions, on similar things against the powers of the clubs. And now we're in the top just because we're the fourth out of 36, which is what we are following this year. Just because we're the fourth out of the 36 doesn't mean we have to forget where we came from. But be under no illusions here. People who listen in, I still read articles on serious news sites about the cult of Union Berlin, the cult club, about how it's fantastic. Those days are gone. We're an established Bundesliga club now. We need the money for what we need the money for. If we're going to buy somebody like Sergio Dest, like it is the rumor, if we're going to get him on board, who has a 15 million release clause and has played for AC Milan this year. Yeah, we have to finance this. Money is unfortunately the ruler of everyone. I don't want to bring people down on this, and we'll now go around everybody for a much more optimistic view. But yeah, Dirk Zingler is a clever businessman. It's good for the club, but it is the way the world is going at the moment.
Yeah, I certainly don't think we would end the podcast on the downer, guys, would we? All important issues. I won't give my two cents for now, but let's have a think about the hopes and dreams of what's to come. I mean, when you look at some of those pots, you've just mentioned where we might be getting our players from, Mark. I mean, going to the San Siro with Union, going to AC Milan, going to the Bernabeu, Camp Nou, Old Trafford, the Emirates. I mean, for me, not particularly exciting going to the Emirates. Been there a few times with Sunderland, got a few decent results. But seeing that Union are in London would be highly amusing with a decent contingent. So very excited. Would love to see us in Portugal again, or just somewhere on the peninsula. I did enjoy going up to Braga, even though we were treated abysmally by the local police. Missed the first 20 minutes, got beat 1-0. Had a great day out with my mate Rob. So I just look forward to more of this sort of stuff. I think we've already seen the dates for the Champions League, so there's a huge amount to be excited about. I think my big hope would be to sign probably a couple of creative players and have a new string or a couple of new strings to our bow for next season. Maybe we can start to unlock some of these teams who are down the bottom and where we do have more of the ball. Kyle, let's kick off with you first. I believe Union can't be in the same group as Celtic, am I right?
Yes, thank God. Thank God, yeah, they can't. We can't be in the same pot as Celtic, so that's a big relief. However, if they were to qualify, I hope they don't because it'd be really funny. But if Rangers were to get through their playoff, we could draw them. And yeah, don't know about you guys, but I think that'd be a fun away day. Just being in Glasgow and nights for me, I'll probably need to take a week off if we ended up playing them in Glasgow. But yeah, hopes and dreams. I hope for an away day in the UK because it's been a while since QPR, and that was one of the best days I've had out with Union, and I think it would be great to do again, and also just purely selfishly from a cost perspective, it's a bit easier to do. I hope also, yeah, we are able to find some creative players in the transfer market, and yeah, start to unlock teams. It'd be good to get another centre forward. I hope we don't lose Becker, because I think he could function well with another centre forward that's maybe it's a bit more pace about him, or is a bit more creative. But yeah, just hope for another fun season following this club, and hopefully get to more games. Champions League games will have to be at the Olympia Stadium because of the stadium rules with UEFA. Like if they manage to make them at the AF, Dirk Zingler's got some dirt on UEFA and all the power to them. But yeah, but with them being at Olympia Stadion, there'll be no Unioner missing out as there was this year for some games. Everyone that wants to will be able to go, and I think there's something to be said for that for such a historic occasion. It's a shame. It's an absolute definite shame. It can't be at our living room, but we haven't expanded the stadium in time, and we never in a million years would imagine to be in this position. So yeah, just enjoy it, and yeah, let's hope it's a good season. And hey, if we can manage to get third in the Champions League group and go on a run in the Europa League, the final for the Europa League's in Dublin, that'd be a cracking night out.
Yes, I did note the Dublin venue today, actually, and thought of you, Kyle, if we do manage to finish third in the group. Baz, we've interrupted a barbecue today, so thank you for joining us. What are your hopes and dreams, apart from probably going off to have some more booze and sausage?
Well, thank God we cannot play Ajax as well in the Champions League, because my old favorite team messed up monumentally in the Netherlands, not only in the Europa League against us, obviously. So that's one nightmare less. What I hope, and what I'm actually quite confident about, because Urs Fischer talked about it immediately after the Bremen game as well, is that we stay close to our roots, that we don't change too much, that we are not going to do a lot of spectacular things. For that, by the that for me also means playing at the Alte Försterei. I cannot see the UEFA having such strict requirements for the Champions League that we cannot play it at the Alte Försterei, because there are many, many small grounds that actually host that tournament. I actually think that the Olympia Stadion would be a horrible experience, because it's just one big empty fucking thing. And yes, all our family members could go to that game, but it's just, it has nothing to do with the kind of football how we want to experience it. So if there really is no alternative, and Dirk Zingler informs us and manages to convince us beforehand, no problem. Otherwise, please at the Alte Försterei, and I'm really hoping for a creative midfielder as well. We dearly miss Andras Schäfer, not only because he's cute, but also because he's just a really good player. And I really think we need that kind of players who, you know, in a very small space, find solutions that other people don't find. We had our Kruse, who was, of course, a bit fat and a bit slow, but he found solutions that nobody else found. And I think if we manage to find a wizard like that again on, I think, what's it called nowadays? The number 9 or number 10 position? I think number 10, we always called it in Holland. That would be, well, Kyle will do the maths on that, But if we would manage to find a player who creates the 1-0 against Bochum, against Schalke, and some other shitty side that's going to play at us, but only comes for a point, that would be a massive improvement. And now I'm going back to the sausages and drinks.
Thank you, Baz. Enjoy the rest of your public holiday and barbecue. Mark?
Yeah, it's all been said, I think. In terms of the hopes for next season, just keep sticking to our values. Enjoy some good games. I'm not so much with Baz on this. I think we did have some decent atmosphere at the Olympiastadion. Certainly the best atmosphere that's been seen at the Olympiastadion outside the away block for quite some years. So there is that. What are my hopes? I hope that Tim Walter from HSV gets a new gig as against premature ejaculation after his running onto the pitch, only to see them end up in the playoff. That's of course for next week. So we'll see where they end up there. But the most important thing, and this is a big one for me here. The most important thing for me is that everybody, whether they're fans, players, managers, anyone connected to Union, that we all stay healthy and that we all stay together and that we all enjoy the time that we have together. Because as this season has shown, there are people who haven't been with us, who we'd really like to see with us back again as soon as possible. So my hope for next season is just continuing to have a good time, all of us together, all of us mates together.
And what better place to leave Matushka's Right Peg, episode 23, the hopes and dreams. I can't put it any better than that, Mark. So thanks everyone for listening. Look forward to more podcasts in the coming months and look forward to another action-packed season. Und niemals vergessen, Eisen Union!